Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. It's the 6th of August.
Yeah. Hey, happy anniversary.
I got an anniversary coming up.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, I have one today, actually.
Oh, really?
Yep. 19 years.
Oh, I got you beat. I'm on Thursday, 8-8, because we were married on 8-8-88.
Oh.
It's 25.
Wow. Nice. I can't believe I'm married 19 years. I mean, I've known her 21 years, but I don't want to say time flies, but it's,
time flies.
Yeah. Listen, we got a lot of things to talk about today. There's some things about I want to talk to you about. First of all, how's the book going? I know that last week we talked about...
Oh, yes. I got my little e-book. It's Inside Track 2013. It's available at InsideTrackBook.com, which is my site. But if you go to Amazon and look it up, you'll find it there. And the curious thing is that my book showed up and came out on Amazon the day Bezos made his purchase of the Washington Post, same time. Well, so I think this is ominous kind of a thing.
It is. And actually, we put it in the sidebar of DH Unplugged 2. It gives a link right over to the right place. So if you don't have to remember where to go, just go over to Dvorak or DH Unplugged.
It's a collection of essays about tech over the last the last year and a half, actually.
Which you do know about, so that's good. We're going to actually, I think, set up a little game starting maybe next week where we're going to have listeners be able to – we're going to pick a stock, right? Just a stock, any stock, let's say, that maybe has some action that's going to be associated with it. And we're going to let them guess the price the following week. Follow what I'm saying here?
That sounds like a winner.
Yeah, so basically we'll give away something, maybe a book, maybe all expense paid trip to Weehawken, something. But I thought that would be a fun idea that we'll start off the school year with, that we can get people thinking about picking their own stocks. But we're going to get a kind of a closest to the pin concept, where they kind of whoever gets closest to the actual number in a week, whatever it is, we pick out a stock and do that. We'll talk more about that. Let's talk about what's going on. Stock markets were down today. We're down yesterday. Your Asia's overnight is down pretty hard. And what's the reason? What's changed? And I really have only a couple things to say. That we saw a better-than-expected manufacturing number on Friday. We saw a better-than-expected ISM service index today. We saw a better-than-expected trade surplus number from the U.S. So now we're back into the old taper tantrum where people are thinking, oh, my gosh, the Fed is going to possibly tighten.
Oh, so everyone's just kind of projecting.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Bonds are getting slaughtered. Actually, was it last I don't remember what TBT had like a 5% day during you picked that for the stock. We talked about that. TBT actually had, I think, a 5% day on the upside last Wednesday, Thursday. So, that's the inverse.
Right.
Of the yields or price, if you will. And as price actually will drop on bonds, that will actually move higher. And what that means is that yields are going up. And we saw several days of the sellers really trampling the bonds. And one of the problems with bonds, by the way, when you talk about it and try to explain it, is that they're upside down. So when the price goes up, yields go down. So you got to talk about, there's two parts to it.
Slightly confusing to an amateur.
Right. So it's very simple. Just to, if you can imagine this, everybody listening.
And by the way, what makes it confusing to an amateur is because people say, oh, the bond prices are going up.
Mm-hmm.
But half the time they mean the price of the stock, and the other half the time they mean the yields.
Right.
So what do you mean? What do you mean the bond prices are going up?
Is right. What's worse? I mean, right now the concern is that if you have yields that move higher, it's going to cost a lot more for the U.S. government and the extraordinary book of bonds that the Fed is holding lose value. I'm not going to let that happen, if they have in control of it. But if you think about bond yields and price, this is not a theory, this is fact. Just think of a teeter-totter or a seesaw. When the yields move down, the prices move up. When the prices move down, the yield moves up. It's just simple like that.
It's not rocket science.
No, it's not. But you have to kind of think about which way it's going. The bottom line is that there is concern that the U.S. is going to start tapering. They mention it. They let the cat out of the bag. And what do they say? You know, once the horse is out of the barn, why bother closing the gate? And people are trying to get ahead of this. So as you see now that better numbers come out, now you see a little bit of a different reaction with markets if you don't have the implicit and clear response by the Fed, which, you know, they'll walk out any day now and start yakking it up, that, you know, we're not going to let bond prices move too significantly.
Well, that's good, because then they're going to have to print more money.
Right.
And exactly. That means that the markets are probably settling back for another run up.
It could be. We also saw two more rate cuts. You know, I don't even know what number we're at. A few months ago, I told you we're at over 500 since the market crash back in 2008. We saw two more this week, Australia and Egypt.
Hmm.
I don't know how many more rate cuts there are out there. You know, Australia's having a lot of problems because, you know, they had an incredible run with very, very – Australia's very natural resource rich. A lot of mining goes on there.
Yeah, a lot of mining.
And, you know, they did well for a while because you saw the – you know, as a matter of fact, they were one of the only – I think they're the only country that didn't go into a recession back in that 2008 era.
I don't think Canada went into much of one.
Oh, I think – well, much, but I think they were in a technical recession. The only one that hadn't had a technical recession was Australia.
Ah, okay. It's possible. You know? Yeah, makes sense. I know they were happy as a clam.
Yeah. They're having some trouble. Their value of the currency has been dropping, which is kind of in a way good. But at the same time, it also is a problem because much of the prices of the – products they sell are dropping. So that's not really helping them. Hmm. And that's causing a big problem with their economy and with their markets, obviously. You know, nothing extraordinary happening there. But a couple of things that are also happening I thought was kind of interesting. Last Friday, there was a House vote to do something about the student loan mess that's going on. You familiar with this?
I'm familiar with it. It's a horrible situation. It's ruining the country. It's astonishing to me that this is allowed to just – this is like the U.S. government's become payday loans.
Yeah.
It's just a horrible situation. It's inexcusable.
But why has it been allowed to happen? I mean, you got a couple of factors, right? You got the push for everybody to get an education. You get the higher prices for education and no way to really pay for it.
I think what happened was people have explained it better than I'm going to, but I think you'll get the gist because I agree with this thesis. They made money easily available for people to go to school, and so they didn't have to really struggle, and there was no downward price pressure on the universities themselves to keep their tuitions low and their fees low, and it, because of this free money, would look like free money, it wasn't though, but it was with lots of strings attached. The universities decided to keep hiking their prices. When I was a kid, and it's just I don't think it was just so long ago things are changed. Essentially, I could go to the University of California. It didn't cost me anything. It was just a minor fee. It wasn't any massive tuition. Now it's like it costs about $40,000 to go there a year.
Right.
And,
right.
Of course, they bring in all these foreign students, which they get an extra $10,000 from, so they encourage that. And they get the money. For one thing, nowhere in the past did you see a situation where a Harvard education and a University of California education were the same amount of money cost-wise.
Right.
They are now.
Right.
Stanford costs the same as Cal, and it's like what happened to the public colleges that used to when the public colleges were lower and they had a good quality product, it forced the other universities to at least think about keeping their prices low. But no, it became a big run up on all the prices, and because of all this money, so you take out bigger and bigger college, you know, student loans to pay to get in, and you put yourself in this ridiculous debt, and the universities are building properties and bitching about how they got no money, and they call up all their alumni begging for more money, and they're charging a fortune and paying people $300,000-$400,000 a year to teach there, and it's just a disaster. It's runaway irresponsibility from every which way.
What's the difference between what happened with student loans, you know, over the last decade or so or two decades, and the firms that sell mattresses, whereas you don't have to pay for 2 years for a mattress? I mean, they basically said to people, here's, you know, just a hunk of money. And can you imagine if you got a house and they said, here's $300,000, you don't have to pay for 3 years, 4 years? I mean, that's what they did. They said, here's this chunk of money that is available to you for your education. They didn't know if people were going to get jobs in the back end. They didn't know what the employment situation will be like. And then they give them all this money with the hopes that they'll get something out of it on the back end, and with all this time that they don't have to pay for it or pay it back. It's kind of this thing that we saw for many years where – you know, it's buy today, don't pay for 2 years, or don't buy, you know, buy today, yeah, don't pay for a year. So right. People kind of racked it up, and then they got, you know, the credit companies got screwed, and the government allowed this to happen in a very major way because the numbers were much more than mattresses or stereo equipment.
No, there are people I know that have gotten out of school. They can't get, you know, they can't get a $100,000 job walking out of the campus. They get some other, you know, some job that just pays enough to get by. They're living with roommates until they're 30 or even longer. They're always in debt. They can't really buy any or accumulate any capital. They can't do any investing. They can't do anything. They're just paying off these debts. It's a pathetic situation. It's close to ruining the country. I mean, this is a depression. Depression classic, as far as I'm concerned. When people look back at this decade, they're going to go, well, how come they didn't solve that problem? It's so obvious what was going on.
Well, the government's now going to reduce down the rates, or it looks like they're going to, if it gets all finalized and packaged up and all, they're going to reduce down the rates on the current loans that are outstanding. I don't know if that means they're going to require any further prohibitions on new loans being issued, because, you know, they are all about educational, all this good stuff, and I don't know. This country wasn't built on, you know, this higher education issue. It was built more, I mean, in the beginnings, of course, it was built more on, you know, education and some higher education possibly, but also was built on, you know, the whole idea of hands-on training. And that's just like frowned upon these days.
Yeah, no, the idea of apprenticeships and the rest is gone by the wayside. You can be an intern, unpaid intern, in some situations, but you're not supposed to. I mean, it's supposed to be training you. That doesn't really work out very well. No, the whole thing is upside down, and it just looks like a scam to get people to go to universities and get themselves deeply in debt. And I think that there should be a huge promotion for just kind of either relaxing the interest rates on all these debts or just forgiving them all. Why not?
Yeah, but
they do
but,
it with these big banks.
Well, right. Well, that's the next thing you have coming up. That Fannie and Freddie were in the speech tonight from President Obama, which he has his vision for scaling back the federal support of the nation's mortgage market, which is, you know, a vision. You know, it's a vision and it's an outline. So you got to pick up on the words, right? There's an outline of a vision, which if you were to try to quantify that is air, you know?
Yeah, it is.
You know, putting, you know, attempting to put together some kind of bipartisan talks to replace the mortgage giants of Fannie and Freddie. Now, replace them with what? Private money? I mean, you got so much crap inside of Fannie and Freddie, and they're starting to do some of the same kind of mortgage deals again. You know, the very thin, you know, amount of money that you have to put down, or maybe ARM mortgage. It's all starting again, and you know, they're going to get themselves in the same hole, but. If the government's not going to be, you know, again, it's what happened was the quote unquote American dream was to, well, back when, was to have a house, and then housing prices escalated, got out of control, and everybody still had to have them, and it got everybody in trouble. Same thing, just fast forward to the whole higher education model.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same exact model, just put on a little bit of a different tilt. But I feel bad. I mean, coming out of school with a, you know, I don't know, pick a number, $100,000, $200,000 in debt, and, you know, having to pay. I know people who, like you said, in their 40s that are still paying debt.
Yeah. It's horrible.
Very sad. Yeah.
I put both my children through school. I mean, it used to when I was a kid. Now, this has changed. The other stuff hasn't. It shouldn't have changed, but this has changed. I think you can't get summer work anymore. When I was a kid, you used to always get jobs. There's factories all over the place or things you could do, and you get paid full union wage too. I'd come out of the summer with a lot of money, and you could work your way through school. In other words, you can't really do that anymore, and so you're screwed, which is another real problem. So I essentially just sacrificed everything I can personally to put my kids through school on my dime,
mm-hmm.
to keep from this happening to them, because I don't want them coming out of school broke.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I did the same thing for my kids, and we did some planning to begin with. Now, here's what's interesting. My kids, when they were born, or about 1 year old or so, we picked up the prepaid college plan from Florida before a lot of things changed. And at the time, you know, we didn't know where they were going to school, if they're going to school. We didn't know what was going on, right? You only hope. And it turns out that I think it was something like $5,000 or $6,000 per kid for a 4-year education plus 1 or 2 years of board. And think about that. It's about five. I mean, you had to pay a little extra here and there, of course, for things, and whether they went to a sorority and their books and, you know, all that. But $5,000.
And by the way, the books have become a scam too. But go on.
Well, the books are a big scam with the professors requiring that you buy their PDF book,
right? For $100 for their course.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, well, it's a good scam, but it's just still, you know, come on.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. No, those days are over.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, the days of gold look like they're maybe over too. We talked about this on we've talked about this, you and I, before. I also talked about this in depth on the Disciplined Investor podcast about the same concept about Facebook's move and where is it going to break and where do you have to look for. Remember that from last week?
Right.
And it did break above the 38, and then you get kind of like this soft zone of people saying, okay, I'll hold it. Maybe I won't, but if it does drop down. Well, gold is the same thing, because gold dropped down very dramatically and people picked it up at the lows and they kind of got a nice ride, but they're not going to be willing to sit around for the next ride down, right? They're going to get out faster this time. And people who were in it and stayed in it the last bump that were getting creamed, you know, to see it go up again, they're not going to willing to kick it down again. So they'll fear play. So now gold went up. It broke the 1300 on the way up for a little bit there and then it started falling. I think it's at 1275 right now. And we'll see what happens. And so some of this is, of course, on the thesis that the Fed's going to tighten. And the bonds, you know, the same thing with the bonds. But the problem is that that makes no sense, because we didn't see the dollar
move higher.
It
doesn't make any sense in any classical way. And by the way, I want to mention that during a depression decade, which I consider, you know, Paul Krugman, by the way, calls this a depression too. So I'm not alone in this. During a depression decade, these rules.
You don't want to put yourself with him. I'm sorry. You're much brighter.
That'll be. Yeah, not really. He's just, you know, more.
He's a whiny, give me government money kind of guy.
He's a political. His politics are different.
Right.
But the point is that during these downturn decades, those old rules, none of them match up. They all fall apart. And this is, I think, a good example. There's no reason for these the way things are going, the way things are pricing against each other, being so different than it historically has been the case. And it doesn't make any sense.
Right. I mean, you have crude oil continuing to stay above 100, 105, 106, even though it was a horrible number last week.
Yeah,
it
it's ludicrous. It went up.
Inventory number come out.
Yeah, it went up.
Yeah, it went up. It was ridiculous. And the thought was maybe it's because of some of the Middle East tensions and the whole thing that's going on with the embassies and all. But if the speculators want to use that.
Yeah. Without that, it's been going up. It's
right, exactly. And then gold is going down, and the dollar has moved up, but now the dollar is moving down again. So there's a kind of a weird – and again, if Bernanke is going to tighten, you would think that the dollar would rise, but yet it went down. There's a very strange movement around there. And I'm blaming a lot of this in the last – we'll call it, I don't know, 8-9 months on the whole move by Japan. I'm still pointing my finger there and saying that that incredible stimulus package they put out was just way over the top, and it just – you know, it's too much water in the boat.
Yeah, maybe. Whatever the case is, it's
so we'll see what happens with this. But now the gold miners are still getting obliterated. You know, they're down another 5-6% today, and they're starting to look a little bit, you know, like they're right on support. They're right at the level the group entirely, the index, is right on support. And I put a chart that I put with this about where is gold's kind of make it or break it line, and that's the gold daily chart there. You see that?
Yeah. Let me see. Oh yeah. Hold on. Oh, okay. This is another wild, weird chart from you.
Yep, thank you. But it tells us a big story. It's a great story here, because if you look at where I have those arrows, see the range between the arrows, let's say, which is about 1265 to about 1200,
mm-hmm.
not 1210. If you look at that, there, you know, if gold breaks below about 1270, there is a pocket of air. See how there's not a lot of the horizontal lines there?
Yeah.
There's a pocket of air that could take it down pretty hard and very quickly down to, let's call it, 1250 very quickly, 1244. before. And then,
yeah. By the way, I want to apologize to people because the Skype connection stinks. And
really,
but we're not losing anything. What's funny is that you break about once every, I don't know, three or four sentences, and it goes like this: the gold is going to go down, and then it's going to stop at 1274. So, in other words, we're not losing data.
No, I have indigestion. That's what's happening.
it's just like there's this information, and then it just gets busted, and then the rest of it comes through. It's very this is an anomaly I've never heard on Skype before. Usually it's like, and you can hear part of it, and it's kind of – you lose data, but we're not losing data.
It's like time travel sort of. It's being lost in a time loop.
Well, something. Okay, well, so if it went below 1180, according to this crazy chart, I'm assuming that it would just fall to zero.
Well, this is on a daily. There's things behind this that you have to look at, too.
Okay.
But I'm just talking about this range right now of 1270 down to, we'll call it 1200. There's a couple of bumps in the road that if it does move down, it will kind of hold. And it looks like there's support there. But I got to tell you something, that 1240 number, if it breaks that, you got big problems. Now, you know, I would say that if you look at the – if you can kind of look behind the horizontal lines that I put on there for you, if you look behind that blob, there is a pattern that looks like, you know, okay, it's retracing some of the recent gains that it came in from July. And, you know, if it stabilizes right about here at the 1275, 1270 line, you know, you could see another leg higher if it holds there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But
this may be a valid chart. We should definitely put it on the show notes.
I will do so. I'll put it right on the
Unplugged
site.
I'm going to use it as the artwork for the show when I put it on my blog.
Oh, nice. All right, let's talk about some other things besides gold. I mean, we kind of beat gold up a bit here. IBM is furloughing workers, and they also had a downgrade. If you remember, there was a pretty negative EPS report that they came out with some time ago, and the stock broke down pretty well, and then it rode up for a while and things were all great and all, and we've talked about how IBM is all about their buybacks and increasing, you know, the EPS through buybacks.
Right.
Well, they're obviously having more trouble than, you know, was
just that
first led on to be. Yeah. So they were downgraded also, and IBM kind of fell today, and that's a big part of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which caused Dow Jones to hit about 100 points down today. And, you know, we're seeing that analysts are starting to, you know, pull back a little bit on some of these major companies after their big runs. We're seeing a lot of earnings come out. About 72% of companies in this quarter have beaten earnings on an EPS basis, and about 54% have beaten revenue expectations. But the actual beat, so now we have numbers that beat, right? Percent of numbers of companies that have beaten. Now we look at the actual number of how much did they beat by. And they've only beaten by about 1% on average on EPS. And that's the lowest we've seen in many, many quarters. And we've seen the lowest growth rate that we've seen. And we're seeing the actual – it looks like a negative growth rate for revenues. So that is playing out. Meanwhile, the markets are still close to a high. Which is interesting. So you have, you know, a lot of what's called EPS expansion earnings PE expansion that's going on. People are willing to pay more for stock even though the earnings are potentially, you know, lower. And we're seeing a lot of fun things go on, like what happened today with and yesterday with Fossil. Fossil was down 7% pre-earnings yesterday and 18% after earnings came out today. So, you know, crazy moves on things. But JCPenney has fallen to its lowest since 2001. Now, you got to feel bad. Maybe you got to feel bad for this guy, Ackman.
Yeah, poor guy.
I mean, this guy is getting...
He's in, he's out.
Direction.
Yeah, he's...
he's got JCPenney, which he, you know, had all this hope for, and he has a big piece of it, and so talks about the valuation of it, how great it is. He's got Herbalife, which he put out a 300-page document on how it's a scam and how it's a pyramid scheme and all this. Stock goes down like crazy. I guess what is it? Icon comes in. I think Soros also comes in and tries to do a short squeeze on the deal, and it works pretty well. And he's getting killed. I think he's suing one of those guys.
Who?
For exposing his – I think he's suing Soros, as my memory
who
serves me.
Who's Ackman suing him? Ackman, the stock picker?
Soros. Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking of the other guy.
You're thinking about Einhorn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ackman does his research, but he's getting – I mean, there's somebody obviously after him. And
isn't this the same guy who – well, I'm getting these guys mixed up. Is this the guy who did the Netflix tried to short Netflix for
– No, that was – no, no, no. Oh, well, that was bad. Oh, yeah, that was – I don't see him around anymore. That's – you know, I think he gave up his hedge fund. But this guy is a hedge fund manager who had a big bet on JCPenney and really talked about how great the company was and stood behind the CEO. And it was just, you know, a great company to have. It was unbelievable. And now it's lowest in 2001. And he was short in a big way Herbalife. And Herbalife turned on him pretty hard the other direction.
This makes you wonder, you know.
Beaten up in both sides.
Doesn't it make you wonder about
these guys come out with their big mouths and they come out with this discussion about their stock, and then you got the other guys piling and trying to blow them out. I wouldn't go up there and start talking about how great a company it was, or, you know, if I had that kind of position. These other guys will cut you to shreds.
Huh.
So earnings are due Friday. Earnings are due Friday.
For J.C. Penney's?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks beginning to look like a buying opportunity.
I would think that we unless have a lot of negative sentiment still, unless they're going out.
Unless they're going out, yeah. If they go out of business, then buying opportunity, schmying opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
But
we'll see. Maybe we'll put that on the list. I have it actually penciled in the list for this week's stock picks.
Yeah, it might be a good pick. You know, yep. Buy low, sell high. So you have a thing on the sheet here. This is what you're talking about. You don't want ETFs for some
materials. Like aluminum and
explain that
copper.
Again.
Yeah, one of my concerns has been that you have these ETFs, and the ETFs are just a place that individuals and others and the investors can invest their money. And what happens is instead of having to buy whether the futures or the physical material, the commodity itself, whether it's corn or whether it's copper, aluminum, gold, you could actually buy it inside the ETF. So you could do it for $100, $1,000, whatever it is. You know, you could do it monthly. You could put the money in. You could take the money out. My concern is when you have an ETF that allows for this, and then the public, let's say, that are not quote-unquote speculators in futures, et cetera, and they're not hedging their positions, are allowed to buy into this, what happens is that you have a price movement that is exaggerated, and the potential for raising the prices or lowering the prices, depending on how you look at it, of these materials that we use on a regular basis for the benefit of the speculators. So, for example, you take aluminum. Aluminum doesn't really, you know, there's no major ETFs out there. But now if you had an aluminum ETF that was backed by the physical commodity itself, the aluminum manufacturers would be happy, right? They'd have to produce the aluminum in order to put it into the actual holding of this ETF. And
well, wait. So you're basically – you've dreamed up this complaint about this sort of ETF, and aluminum doesn't have one, but yet you're complaining about it. Where do these ETFs exist then? Corn?
No, just aluminum itself. No, just aluminum. Just doesn't have a big one right now. There are a lot of they've been trying to get an aluminum ETF off the ground, but they've been shut down many times by regulators and all that.
Oh, okay.
But there are gold. There's corn. You know, the corn one, we have that short. There's ones that have baskets. So there's a DBA and DBC. They have agricultural goods and commodity goods. There's gold, there's silver. There's just a whole host of them. Not all of them are backed by the physical materials itself. Some of them are derivative-based. So what I'm talking really about is the physical, where they're backing the physical commodity. And so you take, for example, corn, and where you wouldn't have the potential price pressure on either side, they're utilizing this for an investment. And I just have this big problem with where you have artificial manufacturing and artificial production requirements that are not used in the standard building or manufacturing process, but using it for a particular item. Oil is a great example. They did it with futures, but they also did it with the physical. And then you have oil funds. Now, do you remember when they were pumping the oil tankers up with oil and just sending them off to kind of hang out in the ocean somewhere?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same concept. They're just warehousing. And that's a big issue that has come up right now with many of the brokers and institutions that they don't – you know, the government is saying, hey, you know what? This whole warehousing thing is over.
All right. So I think the message you're giving us is just stay away from ETFs that are commodity-based.
No, I'm not saying that at all. If you want to invest, great. But, you know, it's like it would be the equivalent to me saying that, you know what, I have a real problem with the fact that that people eat what's the toothfish name? What's the name of that fish?
Sawfish?
What it was?
Bass?
No. But what kind of bass is it? It's something bass. Not striped bass. For goodness sakes.
God.
It's just a really ugly fish. It's a bass of some sort.
It's not a striped bass, it's a sea bass. Chilean red sea bass.
Chilean sea bass. It's on the endangered fish list. They're fishing this. Yeah. Huh. They're fishing the crap out of it. There's all sorts of poachers out there getting it, and people are eating it because it tastes good. Problem is, I'm saying that morally, I don't think you should eat it because it's a problem. But you know what? It's a good fish, so if you can eat it, you can eat it. But the fact is that they shouldn't be in existence to begin with.
The fish shouldn't be in existence?
No, the ETFs. All right, let's move on.
God.
But in the meantime, soybeans trade near an 18-month low. Corn near a low in lowest point of 34 months, which is good for actually the poultry and hog companies.
Yeah, that should make a difference. I want to change the topic here.
Good. Thank God.
So why do you think Icahn bought so much Dell stock just recently?
Because
I thought this deal already fell apart like a week or so ago. It looks like he bought more recently.
I would think. Well, I don't know how recent that was.
Well, he got a bunch of stock at 13 something or other. I just don't see. I don't see the point of any of it, to be honest about it.
The whole Dell fiasco is ridiculous. The whole thing.
August 1st, he bought $51 million worth of stock. I mean, isn't that after this whole thing fell apart?
I think it was very close too. Maybe he was trying to get further elbowing into the board.
Well,
before it happened,
maybe.
Seasoned gent, he's been very active lately.
Yeah,
Was he 74 years old?
He's 70 something. He's pretty old, but he's. Wow. I never thought he was that good at this.
You know, listen, it's like if you have enough money to push things around, you can do a really good job at it. So if there's enough money that he does raise to do this, whether it's through leverage or through investors. You know, he can really make some significant moves, and he's the classic company raider.
Yeah,
that you saw like
right,
in,
from the know, olden days.
Right, where he'll go in, and you know, if a company is, you know, he'll lay off this grouping of employees and shut down that kind of the part of the firm just for profitability, which is fine. I mean, that's what he does. But a lot of companies don't want that. That's why the whole poison pill and you know and all that kind of thing was dreamed up just to keep these guys you know off of them.
So I was looking at insider trading, and I see that Bezos dumped he dumped up 90, 90, 93, 92, three big dumps of his stock to, I guess. I thought he had pocket money. I thought he just basically went into his wallet and said, $250 million. No, it looks like he dumped a bunch of Amazon stock to pay for his little maneuver. Of course, good time to sell. It's a three. I think he sold most of it around 300.
I mean, you know, he's buying the Washington Post. Now, everybody, just to make this clear, he's not buying the entire Washington Post. He's buying the publication division.
Yeah, he's just buying the newspaper division.
Which is really interesting because, you know, the whole idea of newspaper and circulation and Amazon don't really fit.
I think they fit perfectly. In fact, you should read today's column in PC Magazine. I write a 6-point article on the exact 6 reasons that he would buy this company, and it makes nothing but sense to me.
But what I'm saying is from a traditional sense, it doesn't. But you're probably talking about him converting the Washington Post into a digital, right?
Well, I don't even think that's going to happen because, in fact, the Washington Post is the number one or tied for number one, I guess, or – tied for number two in total circulation of printed, and that is a big number, and it's required to be printed for that Washington, D.C. audience. So I don't think he's going to – I think there will be a long-term conversion, but it's not going to be conversion to digital. It's going to be conversion to – it's kind of digital, but I would say conversion to Kindle.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And he's definitely doing that. I mean, that's no question about it. In fact, I believe he's going to reinvent remember that thing that was – I always forget the name of it. I have to always look it up even when I'm writing about it. PointCast. In 1992, there was this product called PointCast that was just sweeping the nation. And it was an internet-delivered news headlines that you'd get on your desktop. And it was everybody was using it. You'd have your desktop, and it'd have it was before browsers. It was before all this stuff. It was just this stuff that keep cropping up. But because we're all on dial-up, and it was just killing everyone, especially in a corporation where everybody would load it on their machine, and the entire corporate network would go down because there was, you know, a megabit network was a big deal.
Right.
And so, and then the company was offered money to, I guess, to sell, and they never did, and they all did. Millions of dollars, you know, went slipped through their fingers, and then it was decided that it was not a good idea to run this product anyway. But this, he could do this with the Kindle because the Kindle delivers advertisements constantly for most users, and they just swap out a just constant change of headlines, ads, and headlines from the Washington Post. But I also think he needs it as a the other main. There's other reasons besides these two, but the other one is he needs it as a lobbying tool. Mm-hmm. Because he is his business is gotten screwed a couple of times. The tax thing is not is just one of them, but there's a lot of internet legislation and bad ideas that can be countered by a newspaper that is in his pocket because he owns it, and I think that's a big deal. The rest of it is just like maximizing, you know, some of the things they've never done at the Washington Post, like become a national newspaper like the New York Times, sell crap, you know, memorabilia and photos and all these things. The New York Times opened their morgue of old photos, and they sell them for lots of money. And it's like a really good idea for a business. They do millions of dollars. And there's, they have never been a big conference company. The Wall Street Journal and the New York Times do all these conferences, which are huge money makers. They can take advantage of that and on. So I think he's – I think he got a deal.
Interesting. Well, we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's quality newspaper, quality writing. We know that.
And no, he's not going to really probably mess with that. A lot of these guys will quit over time. And or they won't, because there's not a lot of places where a good newspaper guy can go nowadays.
Right.
Speaking quit. I'm going to go to the Florida paper. Yeah. Not going to happen.
I'm going to the Sun Sentinel, which I haven't read in years. Or the Miami Herald. I just can't. It's how many cats up a tree can you really read about? Or cars hitting a house.
Right.
Which happens all too frequently down here, it seems. But, you know, when you talk about the newspapers, Barron's, which is not my favorite, you know that, they had a weekend article that I thought this was really fascinating. So they come out with an article, a feature article, that talks about how Green Mountain coffee roasters may drop 20% for all these reasons and all this, right? So coming in Monday, you see, okay, the stock's down 2.5% or so, you know, on that article. And then, you know, it kind of cruises along, and then it starts moving up. Now, you got a tape that's kind of negative. You got an article that's pretty negative. Your earnings coming up in a few days, and the stock starts kind of tracing higher. And it was a little bit up, and all right, so now it's down 1%, now it's down 0.5%. By the end of the day, it was up like 3.5%, okay, which is a real smack in the face to, well, short term, to Barron's. And it seems the only news item that I could find was a Seeking Alpha article that countered the things that they were talking about in Barron's, which goes to show the weight of a Seeking Alpha author compared to the Barron's article, which is unbelievable.
Well, that's an interesting observation. Seeking Alpha, well, they have – I think it's – I don't even know if it's the writer's gravitas as opposed to the style, because Seeking Alpha has a different style of writing than Barron's.
Yeah, they're very aggressive.
Very aggressive.
And because they own – probably the author owns the stock.
Maybe.
No, that's why. They don't just write gratuitously.
Well, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
well, I know there was a guy that used to what was he was hounding? I remember time after time, all he did was write about Apple. Or, you know, it shouldn't be going this low. And he owned the stock, and he was just bitching and moaning constantly. Seeking Alpha is a weird publication.
Well, it's basically you. It's anybody that – not anybody. They have to be approved. I mean, I'm approved of Seeking Alpha. I could write for that whatever I want. We just don't. And, you know, we may one day, we'll see. But, you know, it's you send in the information, and it's basically an opinion piece. And it can be very – by the way, it can be very well researched. There's no question about that. So I'm not knocking it. But at the same time, I've seen a lot of hit jobs on Seeking Alpha as well.
Yeah.
On stocks. So anyway, the Chinese currency is now at a 19-year high.
Yeah. What does that actually mean?
I don't really understand how we convince them to keep their currency, because they adjust the rate all the time. It's not done by markets, essentially. And they keep on pushing it higher because we put a gun to their head, it seems, and told them to do so, which is really fascinating because it's so bad for their economy if you consider that everybody else is trying to bring down their currency. So if everybody's bringing down their currency, or at least attempting to do so, to stir on some kind of economic stimulus and a transition to gain more opportunity, and now China's raising it, but yet how is that good for them?
My understanding of this is that the Chinese have so much wiggle room in so far as their margins, real margins, not the ones that we know about, are concerned in their manufacturing and all the rest of it. This doesn't mean anything to them. It's just a showcase. Look, we're doing what you said. You're still buying from us. What are we supposed to do now?
Right, and the prices aren't going up. As a matter of fact, input prices, if you look at the input prices, part of the manufacturing numbers we saw last week are actually down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of a very strange. Yeah, it's like everything of China. You know, how do you really trust any of the data, even though it's right in front of you? You know, their economy is slowing down. We saw that. Yet they're trying to do so in certain ways because they want to bring down inflation. But at the same time, you just have to put a butt on the end of everything that you think about when it comes to China right now.
Yeah,
I want to talk about a listener question that we had come in real quick. Somebody just said, "Could you please do me a favor and explain what POMO means? POMO." And just to let you know, here's the deal: POMO stands for Permanent Open Market Operations. Whereas in the past, the Fed would come in and raise and lower interest rates, generally dependent on economic conditions in the U.S. If things were really moving higher and there's inflation issues and blah, blah, they would kind of try to slow down the economy a little bit by, you know, kind of inching up interest rates. And if there was a situation where they needed to kind of like goose the economy a little bit, they'd lower interest rates. Well, right now, they don't have that choice. Interest rates are essentially zero. And we call that ZIRP, Z-I-R-P, zero interest rate policy. And by the way, that's what the Fed calls it as well. But POMO is a situation where the Fed has a permanent fixture. They are there and permanently buying bonds until further notice. So they're involved very aggressively, actively, and permanently in open market operations, which is generally considered bond purchases and other kind of Fed, quote-unquote, manipulations and movement of markets or of interest rates and things that they can control. So that's your answer.
In other words, the presses are going full-time.
Full-time, no inflation, which is really spooky.
Great. Well, that's the reason that you have to do it. I'm all on board with all this stuff.
I know.
I think I'm the only one that feels this way.
You feel it selfishly.
Why do I feel it selfishly?
Because you like I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's personally good for you. It's a good thing that you want if the Fed keeps on pumping money in and at least in the near term, there's no negative consequences and not looking a little bit further out of what the potential consequences is. Hey, you know what? All power to them.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't work forever, by the way. There's no evidence that that's the case. And I'm buying into this that we're going to get through this year. In other words, October won't have the crash or maybe have a correction, but it may not be the real deal, which pushes everything off to the – because I'm, again, you know, that's a cycle. I'm a cycle guy. That means that we're going to have a huge depression of massive proportions in 2017. So you got that much time to plan for that. This is based on the model that I took from the 1849 to 1860 economic conditions, and it bases on the 20. I didn't only read this in a recent book on the Civil War that was Essays and Letters written by Karl Marx, and he talks about. He said you have to remember we talked about this on the No Agenda show. He was a columnist, and he just mentioned the 47. Panic, which was very identical, it was a bubble in England from overbuilding railroads, and it created an economic situation in 1947, which matches perfectly the housing boom in 2007 collapsing, and then you had all this gold and stuff discovered, which is the same as printing money by any stretch of the imagination. It's the same thing. And so the money was being printed by this discovery of gold and silver to the tune of $30 trillion, today's money, into the economy. And then it all fell apart because this doesn't go on forever. And that happened in 1857 when, by most researchers, that is actually the first true depression we've ever had in the United States.
Yeah, well, it was depressing. Yeah, I know. Hopefully we'll never see it again.
And after my Inside Track 2013, I'm going to do the Vinegar book. Then I'm going to finish that Cycles book, and it's going to discuss all this stuff.
Vinegar book. Well, I'm looking forward to that one. That'd be good.
Well, that's to save lives. Save lives.
Mm. Oh, okay, good. Have you seen any good – by the way, have you seen any good movies lately? I saw something this weekend that was okay, but I thought there was some interesting comments.
I usually only go to 3D blockbusters, and only if I get good feedback from my son who may pre-screen the movie. And if it, you know, otherwise I'll watch it at home. I got a 3D projector. I can watch it here.
I saw Two Guns this weekend.
I never even heard of Two Guns.
Yeah, I didn't know until I actually saw the name slam across the screen. I had no idea what I was seeing. It was a fun movie. It was a shoot 'em up with kind of a little comic relief. But here's the point: a couple things. I don't think I've ever sat through so many previews. It was obnoxious.
There is a Hollywood is worried sick because this year they don't none of their tent poles worked.
Oh, really? You know,
every year. Yeah, this was in Variety. I was reading it in Variety or Hollywood Reporter. I'm not sure which. But there was a big – everyone's worried sick because they came out with all these tent poles, World War Z, Pacific whatever it is, Rim or whatever that thing's called, the Lone Ranger from Disney. All these were designed to be those summer blockbusters that suck up all the money that keep the studios going. And none of them – they all failed.
Actually, Lone Ranger is taking – it was an announcement tonight when Disney posted the earnings that they're going to take a $190 million loss on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's substantial.
That's a lot of bread. Yeah, it's a lot of bread.
I didn't see it. I heard it was terrible. There's a couple of movies like Pacific Rim, which actually got good reviews from the viewers, and the Rotten Tomatoes site gave it a good number. But it bombed, too. So no, something is amiss.
Yeah, well, the first thing is that it's ridiculously expensive to go to the movies. That's first of all. I mean, the pricing, depending on where you live. I mean, I told you that some of the pricing that I paid recently for 3D movies, and then forget about buying the popcorn. I mean, it's going to cost you $100 for four or five people.
Right, and it's also going to cost you another few thousand after you have the heart transplant.
From the extra food, yeah.
From the greasy popcorn. Yeah. Anyway, okay, I'm sorry.
It was a good try. It was a good try.
Yeah, not on my best.
The thing is that it there's been some prediction. I heard some very odd – I don't know if I'm getting this exactly right, but that Spielberg and Lucas are predicting the end of the current movie theaters we see it today. You know, these big movie theaters with these big pricing, and that could be a lot more at home and a whole different way of – well, not way, but a whole different – experience dealing with movies versus what we have today. I got to tell you, I think I sat through a half hour of previews. I swear to God. That's ridiculous.
Well, it's kind of entertaining. You don't have to see those movies.
Well, yeah, it's a good point because the previews give it everything away. There was a couple of movies I want to see. There's something with Matt Damon coming out that looks kind of interesting. A few others, kind of shoot 'em up things. Well, that's all I saw because that's the previews they put on for you. But the you don't want to arrive late because of fear of missing a movie. But you don't have to really show up if the movie starts at 8. Don't show up till 8:15.
Yeah, there's a lot of leeway nowadays. I think the movie should start on time, like a train leaves, so people don't. They're always staggering in.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
No, I haven't. This summer, I've not gone to a movie. There's a couple I was tempted to. I was going to maybe see the Superman movie, which it looked like it might be good. It had some good buzz, and it flopped. And then once you have a flop mentality out there where everything's a dog and you have all these guys making decisions that put these things into the theaters, you start to think, well, why should I go? It's probably going to be a dog because everything else is.
Yeah,
I think it creates a problem.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and then you have, of course, Broadway. I mean, we were thinking about seeing a show. I'm going to be there at the end of August. And the House of Borman, is that what it is?
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
And it's great. I haven't seen it. I'd love to see it. And my wife told me the pricing. I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's more than a round trip. $500 a seat or something. Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
No, well, when we go, I take my daughter. She's a student. We go to the early rush thing. You go early in the morning. There's ways of getting cheap seats, and they're good seats because most of those theaters.
Well, my daughter's now up there. So maybe I'll get her to do that.
Yeah, and she'll know how to do it. You go into – there's some early thing. You have to stand in line at 7:30 or 8, and then you go right up there, and you and the student can buy – pretty much 10 tickets if she or he wants to, and they buy tickets for show. She can buy 3 sets of tickets or 2 if she wants to go, depending. And it's like the difference in price is like I'd say like a $100 ticket is typically around $25.
Wow. That's good. Let's take a look at some of the stocks that we have talked about. And I think I told you last week that I thought, at least initially I thought, that Questcor was going to actually do pretty well on the earnings. If you remember that, they had earnings.
This is just a showing off thing. I knew this was going to happen eventually.
Sorry. No, it's okay. It doesn't happen.
So essentially what you did is on the 6/5/2013, you picked Questcor, and for all practical purposes, since then it has doubled, and now it is the leading stock on this list.
Well, I mean,
I might say.
No. Well, but no, listen, you have it's a biotech, and the earnings were actually pretty impressive. I was like, wow, when I saw those, I said, geez, those are impressive numbers.
Yeah, that'd been a nice stock to be in.
Yeah, we have for our clients, you know, we've kind of been in and out of it both sides. When it drops down, you come out of it, and it kind of stabilizes, and you find where that level is. And right now it's in the stratosphere, though. You know, 48 was a big level, and then it just
took off.
But you got Live Nation, which you have up 65%, still Corning up 20%. Amazon's only still hasn't broken. Corn up 22%. McGraw Hill up 35%. Cree is your beauty there, which makes the LED lights, etc. 63%. But we don't have anything really busting out on this list here. I mean, in terms of down. I mean,
No.
You have another pharmaceutical. You have another pharmaceutical up 50%.
Which one's this?
Acadia.
Oh yeah, Acadia.
Even some of your other ones. I mean, NVIDIA, whatever that is.
There's a lot of good stocks on here. The only dogs, Berkshire Hathaway was yours, and it's just flat and hadn't done anything. Also, I had, it's you again, Outer Wall, flat, nothing. These shorts have not hurt you, so this which I find peculiar.
Which is amazing, because actually some of the shorts that we actually own are just all, I mean, really hit against us.
Yeah.
You know, they moved pretty hard.
See, I still can't. I'm skeptical about shorting, even though I like it.
Yep, I hear you. We have also the new entries, Apollo Group, up 11.5% since the last, was that week? I guess 2 weeks?
Yeah.
2 weeks or so. Philip Morris, kind of creeping down a little bit. That was a whole smokeless tobacco discussion we had. And Freeport-McMoRan up 3% from last week, which is really good. And I got a couple of names on here for this week that I thought would be interesting. A couple of pencil ins, but Potash Corporation. Now, the potash companies we talked about last week, how they just were absolutely obliterated after that whole Russia/Belarus partnership consortium is ending. But there was a kind of some talk about maybe another guy at the group coming in, and there was some other talk today, and it kind of popped the stock a bit from where it was. And I think the stock could be due for a little bit of a rebound here after a week and a half of pretty hard selling, or a week or so of hard selling. So that's interesting. I thought that JCPenney, what the heck? You know, it's at $13 at this point. How much worse can it get? Which is a terrible thing to say, and famous last words. Green Mountain Coffee, I would short, but I didn't want to put too many things on here. So just as a point of reference also, this is a game that we play. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. And, of course, if you do any investing at all, you should seek financial advice that is competent from a professional and do your own research. John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz Company clients may own securities that are mentioned here, and those will be referenced on the list here if that is the case.
Well, I want in on the J.C. Penney's deal. I want that to be a double.
That's purple. That's going to be a purple.
Yeah. Nah, I got nothing here. I was looking around and saying, well, this might be interesting. This might be interesting, and I see nothing.
Nothing. I mean, it's slow. It's the summertime. It's, you know, it's that crazy time of year where, you know, things are slow and anything can happen. So I don't blame you for –
there's something fishy going on with this stock, FICO, F-I-C-O.
They do the credit scores.
No, this Fair Isaac Corporation. It's not the, this is not the same thing. Is that – no. They don't – is that Fair the Isaac? Company that does that? Fair Isaac? Do they do FICO?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah, I thought so.
Why is the general counsel buying so much of the stock? Oh, he's just options.
F-I-C-O?
No, no. This is just a bunch of options he's dicking around with. It doesn't count.
Oh. Free credit score. Yeah, FICO. Yeah, the FICO score. Yeah. All right. So we will talk next week. And make sure that everybody goes over to DH Unplugged and checks out John's book or Dvorak.org/blog to pick it up. It's available on a variety of different formats, right from his site, or you can get it on Amazon. And we are going to try to put together that little game for the next several, or maybe for a while, we'll see how it goes over, to put the closest to the pin game for stocks.
Yes, like horseshoes?
Yeah.
Or curling?
Oh, I love curling. You ever do that?
No, I've always wanted to, though. It looks exciting.
What would you do?
I wouldn't be the sweeper. I'd fall down. I'm not a good skater, but I think I could really – since I used to be a bowler, I think I can push that stone and nail.
I think I'd sweep. I'd sweep for you.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, we should maybe take it up. It could be a two-man dynamo.
Wow. Can you do two men? Can you do two?
Well, you have to have a sweeper and you have to have the pusher.
But I thought you had like two sweepers.
No, don't you only have one sweeper?
Hmm.
Well, whatever. That's how much we know. Well, we're not going to happen anyway.
Big fans. All right, I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.